event this week aims to help Wisconsin veterans and their families deal with issues they face when they get back to civilian life. The Wisconsin Warrior Summit takes place this Wednesday and Thursday in Madison. We've got a link to event information on the Central Time Facebook page.
We have two speakers from the event with us now. Dr. John Munt is a clinical psychologist who works extensively with veterans. John, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me, Rob.
And here in the studio, we've got Doug Bradley. He's a Vietnam veteran, former Army journalist, and author of Daros Vietnam, Dispatches for the Air-Conditioned Jungle. Doug, thanks for joining us, too.
Thank you, Rob.
Well, let's start with you, John. In your talk, you're going to talk about what civilians may not know and what veterans may not say when talking about their deployment experience. What kind of things do veterans avoid talking about?
Well, Rob, my experience is that veterans very frequently may be most comfortable talking to other veterans simply because they don't have to say a lot about some of the experiences that they may have had overseas. Families may press for details, may be ready to hear details, but they may not really be prepared for the kind of stories and events that the vets returning may have experienced in the war zone. So very often I'm talking about the kind of things that would occur if you're on an extended deployment to a place like Iraq or Afghanistan. It could be traumatic, or at least just could be difficult for civilians to really understand.
So what's your advice for veterans who maybe are facing questions from family members, friends, coworkers back in civilian life, trying to reach a comfort zone with what they are willing to talk about and how to avoid, how to say, no, I don't want to talk about that?
Many of my clients have success with just talking to the family members that they trust the most, perhaps the person who's most likely to be able to hear how they're feeling and then disseminate that to other interested people. And usually just telling them, when I'm ready to talk about this, I will. I appreciate your support. I appreciate knowing that you want to hear about this. Give me a little bit of time to get my own head around these things.
And Doug, let's bring in you in now. You've got some advice. You're on a panel talking about the use of creativity for veterans to express these issues. What kind of things are you talking about?
Rob, there's a number of things we'll be talking about. I liked what John said about trust. I also was interested in his point about veterans relating to other veterans. And we need to find some of those ways that the community can be engaged and with the veteran and vice versa. One of the things we've found in a writing group that I work with here in Madison and other outreach I've done with other vets, both from the Vietnam War and the current wars, is that not everybody is going to adjust or readjust in the same way. Not everybody is going to be able to heal in the same way. So if you have opportunities, perhaps through music, perhaps through writing, perhaps through art, whatever it's going to take for the veteran to be able to perhaps come to better grips with that experience and maybe find a way to begin to express that, we think is a way for that veteran, for him or her, to get home.
And you brought us a journal, actually, with people doing exactly this. This is writing in particular, but memoirs, some fiction. Talk about this. This is the Deadly Writers Patrol I'm looking at here.
I know. It's an interesting name. It's one of those curious things that it's been there, and we stick with it. And what's been really intriguing about that, Rob, is the fact that it's not every every form works for everybody. For me, it was short stories sort of based on Ernest Hemingway's In Our Time that were loosely based on the experience I had and then fictionalized. As you mentioned, some other guys have done memoirs. There's a lot of poetry and spoken word, some extraordinary spoken word and poetry coming from Afghanistan and Iraq vets. So regardless of the form almost, if writing is the conduit, get it down, work with it, share it if you can, and continue to process that experience.
And John, in working with clients over the years, is this something you've seen as successful for some people, whether it's writing, art, poetry?
Absolutely. In addition to the modalities that Doug just mentioned, I also see an awful lot of simply stunning visual art coming out of the veterans I've worked with from all eras of military service, and even a couple who have written plays, performed them, or directed them. So I like the way Doug put it. There's just what's important is that it gets out, and we don't want to ever assume that everybody's had the same experience or needs to find the same way to express it.
So I want to get into some of the issues veterans are dealing with. We hear a lot, of course, about PTSD, post-traumatic stress disorder. And John, are veterans likely to be looking for the symptoms and then seeking treatment if they need it?
Well, I think that also varies greatly from veteran to veteran. A word about PTSD first. I think it's crucial that people understand that post-traumatic stress disorder is just one possible response to traumatic events. It happens to be a particularly severe and a particularly persisting response, but it's certainly not the only way that people can respond to having been through some pretty tough and traumatic experiences. And there's actually going to be a minority of these veterans of recent wars, Iraq and Afghanistan, who are ever going to meet the formal criteria for that condition. It doesn't mean that there are not many, many vets out there who would benefit from a chance to talk to somebody, including other veterans, including mental health professionals, about struggles that they're having with sleep, with relaxing, with debriefing and decompressing, with intrusive memories and dreams of the events that they've been through, and especially with hypervigilance, with just not being able to relax and feel comfortable in settings. So I think that to the degree that veterans know that there's resources for this, whether that be through peer support, through agencies like the Veterans Administration and any number of nonprofits and non-VA organizations, then I think, yeah, they're more likely than previous generations of veterans to reach out for those things.
Doug, let me throw that to you. Whether we're talking about PTSD or the other things John was just talking about, are we in current generations in our latest wars more vigilant about these issues than, say, the Vietnam War generation?
I would agree with that, Rob. And I think part of that is due to the experience that Vietnam veterans had to endure. If you look at some of the other activities that are happening, places like Dry Hooch, where there's one in Madison, there's a couple in Milwaukee, they are springing up in other places. Those were led by Vietnam veterans who, frankly, were shocked and disappointed with the reception that they received when they came home. And so I think that's an indication that, yes, indeed, things have changed, and I think for the better. But that said, and even though we've been more supportive of the troops in these two wars, at least lip service-wise, that doesn't change the horrific experience that these men and women have endured and how difficult it can be for them to readjust to civilian life.
And Doug, I'm glad you brought up Dry Hooch. They're one of the sponsors of the summit this week. We've talked a little bit about them on the show, though. But can you talk a little bit about what they're doing as they move into new cities?
Well, one of the things they're doing, what I love, is that they are they're open to new ideas. They're not sort of judgmental about anybody who wants to help. They've had some partnerships with the VA. They have they've hosted the Deadly Writers Patrol there once a month for people to come in, stop by, listen to what we're doing and share their stories. And I think it's this atmosphere and environment that is about perhaps coffee and not other stimulants. You know, a lot of vets used to get together at VFWs and Legions, and there might be alcohol involved. This is a sort of a drug-free, a safe place. You can talk, meet with other vets. There's rap groups. There's counseling going on. I just think the kind of effort they're putting forward is really critical to young veterans coming home today.
That's the dry part of the name. And, John, I wanted to ask you about that. Veterans dealing with substance abuse problems, how widespread is that? And is there acknowledgement that it is a widespread problem?
Absolutely, Rob. Substance abuse has actually been referred to as the, quote, looming crisis on the horizon for this new generation of vets from Iraq and Afghanistan. In the setting where I work, about 80% of the veterans who I see who are seeking mental health treatment also have a current or a recent problem with substance abuse that's significant enough to get in the way of treatment, hypothetically. So it's absolutely endemic, unfortunately.
We're talking to clinical psychologist Dr. John Munt and Vietnam veteran and author Doug Bradley. They're both speaking at a Warrior Summit in Wisconsin this week that deals with veterans' issues.
And we'd love to hear from you on this. If you're a veteran or a family member of a veteran, what kind of issues were hard for you to talk about, and how did you deal with those issues? Did you find a creative outlet to express yourself that worked? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234. Or you can post on the Central Time Facebook page.
You're listening to Central Time here on the Ideas Network. I'm Rob Farah.
And I'm Veronica Ricker. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
We continue our conversation now with John Mundt and Doug Bradley. They're both speaking at this week's Wisconsin Warrior Summit, Wednesday and Thursday. We're talking about the issues veterans face in returning to civilian society and the difficulty they may have in expressing what they're dealing with.
And we are taking your phone calls now. You can join in if you're a veteran. What was the hardest thing about returning to civilian life and the hardest thing to talk about? And what outlets did you find to work through these issues? You can call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 1-800-642-1234 or post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We'll go to the phones now. We have Ralph with us in Little Suamico. Ralph, hi. You're on the air.
Yes, hi. You know, I just was calling because each Veterans Day I hear a lot of stories, and you know, some of them are inspiring, and they, you know, they show difficulties that veterans have when they come back to the States, and some of the problems they have with PTS and so forth. But you never hear stories about people that went in and they were kind of messed up when they went in and they came out better people, better employees. And I think if we had more of those, we would have not have the perceived idea among employers that if they hire a veteran, that they're not going to get, they may end up with a difficult employee.
Ralph, thank you so much for bringing up that point. And I've read that elsewhere, including from some veterans, like, yes, we have problems, but by this focus on these problems, there's this stigma that surrounds us. John, what do you think of that?
I think it's a pretty important point that Ralph is bringing up. And I think about that sometimes, that in my particular role as a clinical psychologist, very frequently that means the folks I'm seeing are the folks that have come out feeling like the experience of war or deployment affected them in the negative. But I have to tell you, I know a lot of veterans outside of my clinical work, including a cousin who served 27 years, and it was absolutely what saved his life. Is going into the service, having the experiences he did, having the responsibility that he did, and swears to this day, despite multiple tours overseas in places like Iraq and Kosovo, that he is so much the better for it. I agree with Ralph that if those are the kind of stories that got anywhere near as much news as the stories of people doing violent things or taking their lives, we might have a different image of what it means to be a veteran. I do think, though, that these events, such as this Wisconsin Warrior Summit, can go a long way to getting the range of experiences that veterans have out there in front of the public. It's why a true community event like this, I think, is so important, where you have veterans and their families coming, as well as people who would like to help them, who would like to offer services to them.
Well, Doug, it seems like both of these things are true. Victims in a way, but a defining experience in life, not just for different people, but within the same person.
Yeah, I would agree too. And I think what seems to be separating the civilian and the soldier and veteran anymore is the fact that there's no shared sacrifice involved with this. Just because, you know, the soldiers have sort of volunteered to serve their country in war, they didn't volunteer to take over the entire moral burden that comes with it. And you know, I think the caller made a good point, but the fact that a lot of our employers now have no connection or relationship to military experience, might not have anyone who's served in either the, you know, 1%, 2% of the population that's fought these last two wars. So I think part of it is how we've distanced ourselves from one another. And anything that we can use to bridge that gap, if it's job fairs, if it's positive stories, if it's a different take with the media, I'm all for it. But I think the reality is that we do need to help whoever, as many of these men as women, get back home. And sometimes it's the problems we have to deal with first, the challenges they're facing.
Ralph, thanks for calling and bringing that up. We'll go to Steele in Appleton now. Steele, hi, you're on the air.
Hey, everybody. Yeah, one of the guests said how Vietnam vets had set up some of these meetings and all because they weren't welcome back very much at all. And my father served Vietnam 67 and 72, ended up MIA, and then a few years later he was KIA. And a couple years after he ended up missing, my mother told me how she would get calls in the middle of the night and people just screaming at her, telling her what a worthless person strained she is. And families aren't spoken of as veterans. And as I was a child, I never went to a school for more than 2 years at one time. I mean, it was, you know, nice trip, but anyway, I think families are left out quite a bit.
Gotcha. Steele, a lot there. First of all, the idea of a stigma of veterans taking the blame for people who have political objections to the war they're deployed in, Doug.
Well, yeah, I mean, all you have to do is say Vietnam, and you've got that, and it's still happening today. But I think, Steele, I'm sorry for your loss, but I do believe that that's one of the challenges we continue to have. And even though I think the rhetoric has been different with these last two wars, I still think there are many things that separate us rather than unite us. And that's what we need to be working on.
And, John, I wanted to throw the families part of that to you, issues that families might face when a veteran returns or, in Steele's case, doesn't return.
Well, it depends on the family, of course. If we're talking about families, as I think Steele was alluding to, who are serving through or living through multiple deployments overseas or multiple moves, you're talking about something very different than a family who has a loved one go away for a couple of months on a National Guard deployment, for example, and then return. But I think the issues can be very much the same because the family also goes through the deployment. They experience a different range of stressors, but that includes worrying about the service member. That can include all kinds of different financial stressors and headaches and family changes. But I think also what's important to remember is that the family goes through the homecoming. And homecoming is really a crucial psychological process for all involved. It's not just the event when that plane touches down and the folks come out and reunite with the families. It has to do with everybody's expectations and assumptions and fantasies for how life is going to proceed from there. And very often, life turns out to proceed pretty differently than anybody was preparing for. And that's where we start to see those folks needing some help sometimes, some counseling, some external support.
Returning to the point of creativity as an outlet for returning veterans, I mentioned earlier, Doug, you brought this journal of people's writings, poetry, memoir, fiction. Can you read one of the poems for us?
Sure. This is one of the poems we included in the last issue of the Deadly Writers Patrol magazine. It's by a really extraordinary Iraq vet named Maurice DeCal, who's from Brooklyn and has worked with two gentlemen named V.J. Iyer and Mike Ladd, and has put together, it's a project called the Veterans Dreams Project. And now they've put a lot of this spoken word, and they have an album out. Terrific stuff. This one poem I'm going to read is called Raid. I led an assault against the house of a Ba'ath party man and his family. His children were home when I kicked their door down in search of his weapons, maybe in his sock drawer, under his bed, or in his wife's armoire. Nothing. Found nothing. Broke protocol, bringing his wife outside and speaking to her. And she, fearing for his life, gave up everything. And I took him, left her and her children.
Wow. Thank you for sharing that story. We just have a couple of minutes left. And I wanted to focus, you guys both touched on this earlier, the importance of social network for returning veterans. John, why don't we start with you? Talk about the importance of finding someone, whoever it is, to talk about these things.
I just think it's crucial. It could be that somebody finds that in a family member or a good friend who's interested, who has signaled their willingness to listen when the veteran or the service member shows that they're ready for that. Can also be through counselors and mental health staff. And I get asked a lot whether a counselor or a therapist has to be prior military themselves. And I don't believe that's the case, as long as they have a willingness to really hear the stories. An open mind and some cultural literacy, if you will, when it comes to veterans' issues. But I really truly believe also that aside from talking to civilians and mental health professionals, it's crucial that vets find their place in what I would call the community of veterans. And they can do that through peer support groups and programs like Dry Hooch. They can also do that through therapy groups and programs in places like the VA. And veteran service organizations, although I'll echo, as Doug alluded to, that we want to make sure that those kind of get-togethers don't necessarily just revolve around alcohol. I think that's one of the really creative things you're seeing in this country, around the country today, is just the number of organizations that are springing up that are trying to get veterans in touch with other veterans.
All right. John, thank you so much for joining us today.
Absolutely. Thanks again for having me and your attention to these issues.
And Doug, thank you as well for coming up.
Pleasure.
That was clinical psychologist John Muntz and Doug Bradley, Vietnam vet, author of Deros Vietnam. They're both appearing at this week's Wisconsin Warrior Summit. We've got event info on the Central Time Facebook page.